The 15th chapter concentrates on the true nature of our self, the divine, and that is called therefore Purusha, in the sense that the one who stays in this city of body. Body is considered not as our self, but as a place that we dwell in, like we dwell in Providence or some other cities. That city is not I, but I live there, and also I move to other city whenever needed, like George came here from Attleboro. Richard came from another city in Connecticut. What is that? East Killingly. So, like that, people came from different cities. So, they live in that city, but not all the time that they are there. A mind of their, some portion of their is still living there. So, although they travel here, some connection is still kept with that place. That is where they some sense of attachment is kept. So, not that we are always really in the body. Especially you can see when you are dreaming, you are in a different body. You are not in this physical body. You leave it and go for roaming about, and then a connection is still kept. Like you lock your home, go out, and then return to the same home, use the key and open, and then get in. So, although you are not in the house, somehow you keep the attachment, the possession to that house. But once suppose you sell it, or you completely give it up, or it gets so dilapidated that you don't get into it anymore, then you don't worry about it. It is, you don't feel that strong, that attachment, affiliation with it anymore. So, just as that house, that city is yours, but not that you are always there. So also the body, you live in the body, but not always, although you retain a sense of possession about it. And therefore you go back to the same body. Imagine that this Charles from Virginia, who is here right now, goes to bed, sleeps, and if he is not keeping his lock and key and rightly gets into that body again when he wakes up, imagine he wakes up as this Charles. It will be a transformation, that it is another instrument that the fellow got into. It is a possibility that if we don't retain the hold, then somebody else may enter into our house, or if we don't really identify our house with certain identification numbers, then we may by mistake start knocking on some other houses, so, and may perchance get an entry too. Mm-hmm. So therefore, normally it doesn't happen. And that is why sometimes it is thought that we and our body are not separable. But that is not the case. They are separable, but somehow we are bound by it. We are attached to it. So, it is told that when the time comes, we give up that body and go to another body. It is like moving from one house to another house, kind of permanently, because that house is no longer going to serve the purpose. We do not want to live there anymore. It is dilapidated and so forth, like the body, dilapidated, not serving the purpose. And although there is attachment somewhere inside, the process of selecting another body is already going on. Just as when you have the thought that I may not be living in this house for too long a time, let me start looking for another house, and this is a good time to buy, the market is down and so forth. So you start looking for another house, that and look for it according to your needs, and also according to the money that you can afford to pay. So you start looking, hey, I would like this. I go to Vedanta Society, so I would like a house that is nearby. It is too far away to drive from about 2 hours or 1.5 hours distance to get here. It is, if I get a house nearby, that would be better. We think about that. Then I also go to my work, and so it should not be too long a commute from the work. So all these ideas, you know, when we are selecting a new house, come to us. And finally, by balancing all these conditions and the availability and the price, a house gets selected. Then we start slowly moving the things. We haven't given up this house as such, but are almost prepared now that yes, I will be moving from this house to the next house. The things you start moving already once you get position, that okay, let me call U-Haul or whatever that truck, I will get one and then start moving. You may fix the moving day, that, and then start moving things. What do you move from one house to other house? All that which is valuable, everything that is valuable gets moved. Only that which is trash, garbage, that you anyway don't want at all, that you discard. Otherwise, everything that you move to the new house, like recently our Parvati a few years back changed the house. So she moved everything, all her diamonds and rubies and pearls and gold. Parvati, did it not? And you took everything to your new house. Not that you didn't say that let my diamonds remain here, let my pearls remain here. Everything that was valuable, that was taken to the new house. The mortgage or whatever debt and all that, that also you cannot get rid of. That also is carried over. Everything gets carried over into the new house. It is. So when we move into the new body, all that gets carried over to the new body. Everything is now functioning through the new body, according to the capabilities of this new body. The old body has its own capabilities. New body will have some difference, not exactly the same thing. Many changes would be there. And so in the new body you will have your desires, but only those desires will get vent, those will get expression, which are possible to be fulfilled by the new environment and new body. So new body is taken up like that, and then the self is now functioning through this new body with the same old subtle body. The subtle body, the repository of all karma, all your information, whatever you did, whatever your achievements and so forth, that is what I meant by having all the valuables. That all these valuables, they are there, and with those in the new body you start functioning. So these capabilities have been told, that this is how the movement takes place, that and this is the divine, but had this somehow by through ignorance, through nescience, in an inexplicable way, has now forgotten this all-pervading divine nature, and so is having this miserable state of desires, having desires. I want this thing, I want that thing, and because perfect cannot have desires. It is when you know that you are perfect, you cannot have any desire. When you forget that perfection, then all the desires come up. And then for fulfillment of those desires, you take this pair of instruments, the subtle body and then the gross body. That the ignorance is also technically called a body, called causal body. That because of which you take these two, you feel the need that, well, I should have this thing, some sense of imperfection, I need fulfillment. And that ignorance, there is no specifications there about that ignorance. So in the causal body, you have no particularization that can be expressed. Therefore, in the deep sleep, everybody attains to that sameness, and no differentiation there. It is whether you are king or whether you are a mosquito, in sleep, both of them are same. A sleeping mosquito and a sleeping king, both are same. When they wake up, then, well, they get attached to their subtle and gross body, and thus start expressing their specifications. Otherwise, the specifications are there, but they are kind of locked, dysfunctional, and therefore do not express themselves. So this is how our personalities are. Each of us is like that. That the divine. Divine. So Lord says, Mamaivamsho, that my own part, my part in this Maya becomes a jiva, an embodied being. There is, if you try to find out what it is, you will never be able to find. Because that is really non-existent. You cannot specify that how it happens. This is a philosophical or logical problem, really speaking. That can you explain why there is ignorance? No way. No, there is no way to explain it. And the Vedantists simply say, no, we don't know, we cannot. And in fact, they give another argument that if we are able to explain it, then, well, it is not ignorance anymore. It is knowledge. It is not possible to explain it at all, how it happens. And moreover, they say, if we are able to explain how it happens, then it has really happened, and therefore we are explaining. We maintain that in reality it never happened, but it appears to have happened. So therefore, like the rope appearing as snake, how did rope turn into a snake? You can never explain it, for rope never really turned into snake. The rope remains as rope, appears as snake. So how this all-pervading, ever-free, ever-omniscient divine started appearing as this little being? How, what made it do that? Well, we don't know, but that is a fact. Therefore, in the book Jnana Yoga by Vivekananda, he maintains always that, look, Maya is no explanation. Maya is not a theory. It is just a statement of facts. It is, that's all. We have no way to explain it. It is not a theory. It is just, that is how it is. Although it is one, all-pervading, yet looks many. Although infinite, appears as finite. Why? Sorry, we don't know why. But it is like this. So, that therefore gets these bodies. And when one gross body, which is very flimsy, very impermanent, very fragile, and so breaks quickly. But then for that, we do not want to give up the subtle body, which is far more durable. That we don't give up, we take it, because that is the wealth. So we take it to the new house, new physical body, and then it starts working from there as per the capabilities and possibilities of the new body. So, like the earlier body, maybe 6.5 feet tall, and then new body became only say 5 feet tall. Now, although the software, the subtle body is same, now it has to work through that much size of the gross body. It is earlier it could reach on a top shelf. Now it cannot. It has to climb on a stool. So it is the subtle body remains same, but the gross body changes, and so the function gets controlled by the possibilities of the gross body. So it's like that. Now, a question comes, and that is often asked by those who do not want to believe that there is anything apart from body, and then the soul takes the mind and goes into another body. Especially the Western psychology and neurology identifies body and the mind and the soul all together. It is just no separation. Body is I, that's it. So, they therefore question this, that if you think that there is a soul, and then when it gives up this body and moves into other body, why do we not see it? We should be able to see it. See, science means verification. Science means we should be able to see it actually. Just hearsay and speculation and all that is not science. It is not really a proper knowledge. It is just surmise. Why? We should be able to see it if it is really happening. Here, an assumption is made that existence depends on our seeing or our sensing through these sense instruments. Friends, that is not the case. Many things could be there, but not reachable, not catchable in the net of our these sense organs. And so we cannot see it. That is no reason to say that it doesn't exist, because you can see it. For example, you may say that we cannot see electricity. Yes, you can see the lights are functioning and so forth. So you can see it through the effect. You cannot see atoms, but then yes, you can see the atoms through some other instrument on which they create an effect. So you see the effect of that atom. So you surmise, you see the effect. Even when we say that I am seeing an object, I am seeing this microphone, what I am really seeing is the effect that something outside is causing on my retina. Then that effect is carried into the brain, and then there is some deciphering happens according to the program, and then that is what is perceived, and then that it gets called as a microphone. So it is just a sense of perception that we have. Really what is outside there, we do not know. In fact, this division of outside and inside is also a programmed one. Everything is really inside the brain, and yet the brain separates as something inside and something outside. And that there is, everything is really perceived inside brain, but as if outside. Like that Dakshinamurti Stotram, that beautiful hymn on which we had a retreat some weeks ago by Swami Dayatmananda. Many of you were present for that. So it says, Paschan Atmani Mayaya Bahiriva. That it is perceived actually within, but as if Bahiriva means as if outside. It is as if it is perceived outside, but it is perceived really within. There is nothing like outside. But the brain has a programming by which it is, it has the sense of inside and outside. There is nothing like inside and outside. It is a part of how we get deceived. Do you understand this, Richard? Inside and outside is itself a part of programming, a part of delusion. There is nothing really speaking inside and outside. Everything is really inside, but perceived as if it is outside. It is a brain programming, that's all. Every perception is really that brain is having it, nothing more than that. So, here it is told therefore that this perception is, you are having it, and then with another instrument you will have another perception. You carry it from here to there, not in the sense of space, this is just analogy, but in awareness, in consciousness, you give up one instrument and attach to another instrument. Like you deleted the information from one computer and put it on another computer. Now it is not, it is perceived as if it is from this space, it has gone to that space. But that is not a transfer in the space. It is the information transfer, that's all. It is not done from space to another space. Although the word space gets used there too. but it is not a physical space. So, when the transmission takes place from this computer to another computer, why do I not see it happening? It is told here, you can see it if you have the right instruments. You have to develop those instruments, then you can see it. In science, you know, there were the instruments had to be developed to see certain phenomena, to verify certain surmises or certain theories. And when those instruments gradually got developed, those theories were either verified or were rejected. One theory about, for example, the general theory of relativity, Einstein's general theory of relativity, actually it was for both the special theory as well as general theory, that the gravity pulls the light was specified there in the theory, that the light will have the effect of gravity, like all of us have, feel the effect of gravity. You throw a ball and then by gravity it comes down. So it is, if you jump and if there is no gravity, you will be just automatically be going up. There is without coming down. Fortunately, it's not the case. It is you come down. It is we all feel gravity. The question is that if you throw a beam of light, it doesn't seem to be falling down. It keeps on going without having any perceivable effect of gravity on it. So does light get attracted by gravity? When Einstein proved that energy is also matter in a different form, it has weight. People wouldn't believe it. It ran quite counter to their instincts. And so, although in theory it was all right, one needed an experimental verification. But how to get that that measurement? Because the deviation would be in normal Earth's gravitation, it would be so small to measure. We didn't have the proper instruments to measure it. So, what they did, the scientists were waiting for an opportunity, and when there was a total solar eclipse, they saw, they were focusing on a light of a star that would be coming to us very close to the sun. Comparatively close means not like we are sitting here, not that close, maybe just one light year or so forth. It is it was coming like that. And then the sun has much bigger gravitational field than that of Earth. Let us see if the light gets bent by the sun's gravity. And then they were able to see that deviation and measured that, and thus that furnished the proof. Things were observed, because now there is instruments are there, that those telescopes were developed, those conditions were created where that observation could be made. Without that, the observation could not be made, and therefore Einstein's well calculated and mathematically presented theory yet was not fully accepted. No experimental verification there. And so people say that, well, the soul with the subtle body and all the tendencies and all the karmas and all the organs, it goes to other body, Why do we not see it? We need to see it. Can we see it? Can we see it? And Lord gives the answer, yes, yes. Do you want to see it? Who want to see it here? Is there anybody? Oh, you want to see it? You want to see it? Who want to see it? You too want to see it, John? Everybody wants to see it. Most of us are just shy of raising hands, that's all. It is. It is. The Lord says, if you don't want to see Teresa. Okay. If you want, you can see it. You can get an experimental verification of it, provided you cultivate the right instrument. And that is what he says, that utkramantam sthitam vapi bhunjanam vagunanvitam vimudhananupashyanti pashyante jnana chakshushah. This is the 10th verse. The deluded do not see that being departing from this body or residing in it or experiencing objects being associated with the senses. But they who have the eye of knowledge see that being. It is, Lord asks, forget about its going from one body to another body. Do you see it even while residing? Suppose you just have a very vague idea that I am in the body. Do you really know where it is? Do you really feel that it is? Do you know any qualities of it? You have really not. Forget about when it is going from one body to another body. Do you see it residing in your body? You don't. It is an analogy fine, that it is like you living in the house. You living in the house, see yourself, see your face in a mirror and so forth. But do you see this being living in the body? Even while living in the body, you don't see it. What to speak of when it goes into another body? You don't see it. So, but why you don't see it? Vimudha, you are deluded. We are deluded by this idea that we are the body. And therefore, we cannot see the dweller inside the body. Our perception is very, very gross. It is, if you want to say cut a potato, just to give an analogy, you have say a 2-inch long and wide and all that potato. Now to cut that potato, you will need a knife which is at least less wide than the potato. If the blade of the knife is so blunt that it is more than that width of the potato, then how can you cut the potato? You cannot cut the potato with it. So it has to be something sharper than that. So we want to see the self, but we are self within the body. But all the instrument that we have is this body. Now how can you penetrate this body if you do not have anything sharper than that? You have to have something sharper than the body to penetrate it. You may say, no, we have the fine blades, surgical blades, and then we... But that is part of this grass physical thing. It is not sharp at all. It is this... it has to be sharper than physicality, friends. It has to be sharper than that. That is why you can go all day brain scanning, MRI and whatever, all that. Wonderful, you know, very good. But what do they see? They can see only physicality, nothing sharper than that. So you have to develop that. And it requires detachment from body. You can see the dweller if we disidentify ourselves from the body. If we do not, then naturally the dweller inside, how can you see? It is, you cannot see the dweller inside unless that cultivation comes. That cultivation comes through a deep meditative and yogic practices done methodically for a long time. Then that instrument gets cultivated, and with that instrument, pasyanti jnana chakshushah, you get a different vision, a different perception, where now you can see the indweller. Then you can see the indweller in the body and then going into some other body. All that could then be seen. Some of us stumble upon such perceptions. Not that they have cultivated anything, but they accidentally stumble upon it. And that is how many get those perceptions occasionally. That kind of gives them a very scary feeling, that what's happening to me, what am I seeing? Because it is not a cultivated, a confident perception. It is something that is happening accidentally, and since it does not tally with their normal experience, they feel tremendously confused that the ghost experiences and so forth that people get, that, well, I saw many of them, of course, are just because of fear and so forth, and that you read an Alfred Hitchcock story and then start imagining something, that is a different thing. But some suddenly also get that fine perception where the subtle body gets felt. And you feel that a person came in my room and was sitting just next to me. And it is a scary feeling how I did not know. And if anybody can come in my room, you every day then before sleeping, so you double check your locks, if you have locks. But it is that those locks can obstruct only physical intrusion, not the psychic intrusion. That can just come without your locks, your keys or whatever. It will still come even though you have made it completely airtight and so forth. So, suddenly people perceive it, and then that, because it does not tally with their normal physical perception, they get that feeling of fear, and they don't know what's happening. They think that they have to go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And well, the poor psychologists, like, they also don't have much idea of these things. So they just give some sleeping pills, okay, probably you have disturbed sleep and so this is happening. So take this, or if that persists, let us have a brain scan and so forth. It is, but this is much deeper a phenomena than that. And so Lord says that you have to cultivate this awareness that you are not this physical body. Just as you so clearly know that you are not your computer, you are not your house, so also we have to cultivate this consciousness, friends. that I am not the body. And then, as you cultivate it, then you will be able to see without being scared, without being really worried, without really being bothered. It is a perception that is of a much higher level. And in fact, you feel more bliss because now you are not confined to body. You are kind of that liberation, a step in liberation has already been achieved there. A very big step to know that you are not the body. And thus, you see how much freedom it brings to you. Since you are not body, you don't have to worry about aging. You don't have to worry about, whether I am a man or woman, no gender there. All those gender-related, sex-related, age-related issues which bind us so much, what happens to them? They are all gone. It is really so simple. Just as you know that your shirt has a hole, doesn't mean you have a hole. The shirt is white, doesn't mean you are white. Shirt is black, doesn't mean you are black. So also, the body male doesn't mean you are male. The body female doesn't mean you are female. See how much freedom. The body 70 years old doesn't mean you are 70 years old. It is your house or your computer or whatever is that old, that's it. You are not that old. See how much freedom and therefore how much bliss you can get. Now the little pleasures that we get are all percolated through this filthy and coarse instrument. But when you know that you are not that, then the upsurge of bliss is really great, friends. And so this is called Jnana Chakshu. That you have to know this. Those eyes have to be developed. And then you can feel love also much more. And the, through body you don't feel, cannot feel much love really. Very little, and that is mixed with so much hatred and so forth, likes and dislikes. Don't feel much love at all through body. But when you know that you are not body, a great love is felt. It is, all these things come. So it says that you have to develop that sense and then you will be able to actually get experimental verification. Till then, you have to get only the theoretical explanation for these things, that's all. But if you want actual perception of it, okay, you will get it. But develop the instruments. It is many times people really, in this case, if you do not say have ever used a microscope, a microscope you don't know how to use, you don't have one, and then if you look at yogurt and somebody tells you there are little worms in yogurt, you will say, you fool, if they are there I will be seeing them. It is, I don't see them, and so therefore they are not there. It is exactly in the same way these psychologists and neurologist friends, they say there is no self because they don't see it well. Have the instrument, then you will see it. Develop the instrument, put a microscope, and then you will see all the worms. Maybe you will never eat yogurt again then. So therefore, better don't go to see. But it is, you can see all those worms. So develop that eye, develop that faculty, develop that instrument, Jnana Chakshu. Jnana Chakshu, the eye of knowledge, and then you will see it. And sometimes, therefore, the divine figures, symbolically, they are shown with three eyes. In Hindu gods, goddesses, they are shown with a third eye, especially Shiva, Mother Durga, and so forth. They are shown with a third eye, an eye here. It is pictured as if a third eye here. What is this third eye? When this third eye, it is eye of knowledge. When it opens, then all that one sees through ignorance just is gone. And therefore it is shown in those mythology movies that Lord Shiva opens the third eye and this whole universe is burnt away. What is the meaning of that? Some people say, what a cruel God, burns the whole universe. What is gone by opening the third eye is all ignorance, and with ignorance the products of ignorance also are automatically gone. All these names and forms, what we call this world, what is it? It is product of ignorance. Product of ignorance. And so when knowledge comes, what happens to it? It goes away. Oh, then my dear this and my dear that, all goes away. There is nothing like that at all. When the eye of knowledge opens, then everything of this falls away. You need courage, friends. We all need courage to practice Vedanta. Vedanta is certainly not for sissies. It is for the courageous. Those who are bold. Last time I was telling that especially we Americans have to do more for this. Because what do we sing in our national anthem? Land of the free and home of the brave. Do we not say that? So, we have to, in this land of free, let us become brave. Brave, courageous. What will happen to mind is, that is just cowardice. If the truth is saying that this is not real, then let us be brave to hold on to it. It is really, that is what is going to bring us that eye of knowledge. And then we will be able to see all these things very clearly. It is therefore told you should make concerted efforts to do that. The next verse says that yatanto yoginashchaina, the 11th verse, yatanto yoginashchainam pasyantyatmanyavasthitam yatantopi akritatmano nainam pasyantyachetasah. A great verse, that the yogis who strive see that being seated in themselves, but those who are not self-controlled, being thoughtless, do not see that being in spite of striving. Striving means you have to strive methodically. You have to learn to control the propensities for physical pleasures. That is, otherwise you get attached to body. And how can you then separate yourself from body? And therefore, it is told that yatanto api akritatmano, a beautiful word, difficult to translate into English, that you may be making efforts, but if those efforts are not accompanied by control, then it won't bring the proper results. If you keep on pouring, say, water, in a pot to fill the pot. Now, if you have the holes in the pot, then what will happen? Even though you keep on pouring for eternity, you will not be able to fill the pot. So your the spiritual practices or so-called spiritual practices that we do will become useful, practically useful, only if there is that yatantah api that kritatmano means a controlled life has to be led, a disciplined life has to be led, that plugging of the holes has to be done. It is if we do that, then only it is possible, friends, to see this self. And that is why in Bhagavad Gita, at other places also, we see this idea that you control this. That is the yoga, really. That controlling the senses is yoga. So control that, and then your efforts will breed the proper results. So now Lord will be telling from the next verse that how everything that you see big or great in this world is really my expression. It is God who expresses through all these things. So just to remove this idea that will I then lose this world? Suppose I get God, many get this idea, rather funny but meaningless, I mean, but still it comes to us, maybe I will get God, but then all these nice things in the world all those things I will lose. Will it not be the case if I lose all these things? That is not what I want. I want that God as well as this. I want the rope as well as the snake. That is what we think it is. So Lord is telling that what you are seeing as world is nothing but my expression. What you were seeing as snake, it was just the rope that is appearing. You are not going to lose the snake really. You will lose the snake only with this, that the snake was not real. The rope was appearing as snake. So you won't be losing anything. So that assurance is being given by the Lord, that if you get God, not that you will miss something, only the dumbness will be missed. Who maybe is going to miss the dumbness? So therefore that is the only thing to be given up. So we shall continue to see this verse next Friday. Any questions? Okay, yes, please read it out.
Commonly said, when we wake up, we again start using our subtle and gross body, but don't we use subtle body during sleep?
Good question, yeah. In dream state, we use subtle body. In the deep sleep state, it is not used, except with that sense of memory. All other functions of the subtle body are kept in abeyance, and we don't use it. Yeah.
To develop proper instrument to know truth, Swamiji said meditation needed to be done for a long time. Is time really a criterion, or is it the intensity that counts?
Well, both intensity, continuing for a long time, both these things are important for an aspirant. If the there is no intensity, only time will not be of great use. But if there is just a spark of intensity and it just goes away, that also is not going to be of great help except as reminder. And therefore, both intensity and length in time as an aspirant's progress, that is, both are important. Not that one can be traded for other. If we have intensity, then the time also will be long automatically. Let me give an example, something that you intensely like. Automatically you tend to spend more time with it. It is intensity in meditation automatically makes you stay with it for a longer time. Why do we want to get up from the seat of meditation? Because mostly there isn't an intensity associated with it. If there is the intense moment, then you start forgetting the sense of time, and then you sit for meditation automatically for a longer time. If there is no intensity, we start seeing things differently. We suddenly remember that my feet are going to sleep, I shouldn't be sitting for too long a time, let me get up. You suddenly remember some other work that you wanted to do, get up. Or you feel that you didn't have enough sleep, so let me go and sleep. All these things make your meditation shorter, which indicate that there was not intensity either. If there is intensity, one will not think of these things. Automatically you will see that there will be a correspondingly longer length of time too. So let us conclude with the prayers, concluding prayers. गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्र विस्तरे या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतम् एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।